name is Angel Yanagihara. I'm a research professor at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. I've been working for the last 18 years investigating the biochemical basis for the severe stings that are inflicted by this class of organisms called cubozoa, or box jellyfish. And there are over 30 different species. In Hawaii, we have at least three species, maybe five. And these animals, for the most part, go unnoticed. But we have one bad stinger, this Alatina alata, that comes 8 to 10 days after each full moon from about the night high tide to the morning low tide. And sometimes there are some animals left in the water in the beginning of the day, and you'll have visitors and surfers be stung on those mornings.
So how has the research helped to dispel some of the popular urban myths on, like, you know, pee on it and stuff like that?
Well, if you go right now and Google jellyfish sting, you will find all sorts of remarkable advice, from putting shaving cream and scraping it with a credit card, to using ice packs, to peeing on it, to using meat tenderizer. All manner of things are being recommended, even by highly respected sites such as eMedicine, Mayo Clinic, the British National Health Service. And unfortunately, there are too few laboratories in the world who are doing basic research in this field. And so the reports that get out there are few and far between. And the conclusions that are drawn by these few handful of reports get magnified. And added to that are all sorts of opinions by dermatologists who may never have done any experimentation themselves yet, had the idea that shaving cream should work, and they tried it on their child and they thought it was a good idea, and now they're out there recommending it online where there is no evidence-based study that agrees with that recommendation at all.
So the research helps to kind of dispel these things.
Well, research is our only way to make progress. Otherwise, it's just a muddled mess of people's opinion. So evidence-based decisions are far better than authority-based decisions. One would hope that the authorities would be basing their opinions on evidence, but in the case of jellyfish sting treatments, all too often one finds authorities who are making recommendations that aren't linked to scientific studies or any kind of rigorous evidence base. I was stung myself very badly in 1997, and I had seen the jellies on the beach, and the woman had warned me not to go swimming. It was about 6:15 a.m., and I was there and wanted to swim, so I thought, well, this couldn't be that bad. As I came back in, almost an hour later, I ran into a whole swarm of these box jellies, and it was horrible. That certainly got my full attention, and I set about after the fact to try to figure out what was in the venom, just doing a literature search, just out of curiosity. And when I found that there weren't any publications that had systematically characterized the composition of the venom, I wrote a grant proposal to the Hawaii Community Foundation to do that. And I was really delighted when that was funded. So over the last 18 years, I have been doing this sort of systematic biochemical characterization of the venom, which is basically to say taking apart this complex cocktail and identifying the components that make up this mixture that is venom, and then looking to see which of those components is the most active, and then finally devising ways to inhibit those active components.
And I understand you can't, of course, you can't use humans as a test, but how do you go about by testing these stingers?
So the reality of the literature has been that there have been different double-blind kinds of studies and single-blind studies in which folks who were stung did actually consent to different treatments, so whether it be hot packs or cold packs or vinegar, et cetera. So there actually is a human test basis in the literature for different approaches. But we actually wanted to get away from that because it is problematic on a number of levels. And we found that with the box jellyfish, that it is massively hemolytic. So we were very fortunate in that we can use an old standby in physiological assays, which is hemolytic activity. So that, for the most part, was the beginning of our work.
So with all of this, what works the best?
In our recent paper, we developed a number of different assays. So we've taken our earlier approach one step further and taking live human red blood cells and then mixing them with what's called a low melting point agarose, we can actually make the red blood cells, lay it on a microscope slide in an optically clear gel and make a model of human tissue. And what we did then was to test applying the tentacle to that, and we found that it spontaneously stung the human red blood cell agarose, and that caused a clear lytic zone, and we can track that with time. So basically, it's a model of what the tentacle is doing to your skin. When the tentacle contacts human skin, you have this hemolysis going on in the tissue, and that increases with time. So having a model now of a sting, we can then try different ways to address that. If we add vinegar to it, if we add something cold or hot or other technologies to this site, would it make it better or worse with regard to the hemolytic activity? So that's what we have done and published in our new paper. And we're very excited about that because this hopefully would be a game changer in the field, in that other folks in other parts of the world can use these same models or perhaps take what we've developed and go even further and do more rigorous testing of different presumed first aid approaches.
And out of everything I'm sure you've tried pee and vinegar and ice and everything so far, what's worked the best?
Well, as far as the standard that are out there right now, we find that to remove the tentacles and to clean the site, the best is the old standby vinegar. And there had been some controversy based on a very small paper that used a battery to stimulate a tentacle and then had that stinging a piece of membrane and then testing vinegar whether or not it recovered more or less venom. And the amount of venom that was recovered in that experiment was not even sufficient to be biologically relevant. Yet that small study got magnified to the Sydney Morning Herald that claimed vinegar can kill. Our new paper clearly shows in statistically powered studies from a number of different approaches, different model approaches, that no, vinegar actually does what it has been doing and observed in the field for over 40 years. It's a very potent way to inactivate all the stinging cells. So you have a weak acid that can basically acid fix the tentacle and the stinging cell so that no more stinging can occur. So after the tentacle has been briefly exposed to vinegar, it's completely dead on arrival and there would be no more stinging. After that, though, there is the other side of the coin, which is the venom that has already been injected into the skin. Vinegar applied on the surface isn't going to get deep into the spaces where the venom has been injected by these bullet-forced hypodermic stinging cell tubules and remains embedded in your skin. So the next step is how best to minimize the effect of venom that is injected. And we tried ice packs and cold and various other commercial agents which are on the market. And we found that ice did not help and hot water was the best, which again is in agreement with over 40 years of observation that all known marine venoms are heat labile. So that's a good news. But we've actually sort of moved forward further than that. And I've had funding from the Department of Defense to develop technologies for U.S. combat divers, and I've been able to develop a technology which works even if one doesn't have hot water available. This pharmaceutical-grade cream has actives in it which can get into that epidermal and dermal space where the venom is acting, and we show that also in this new paper.